You're listening to the Whole Hog Sports Podcast. And now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Arkansas lost to Texas A&M over the weekend, but is Bobby Petrino the front runner for Arkansas's job? We got some thoughts on that today on our podcast. We'll also look at what happened around the SEC over the weekend. First, a word from Kendall King.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design, with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
If you were at the stadium Saturday night, you felt this. The atmosphere there was incredible. And especially so, I think, for a team that is going through what Arkansas is going through. I mean, you're talking about this is a program that fired its head coach 3 weeks ago. They're in the midst of a lost season. And yet people showed up and they weathered the storm, both figuratively and, you know, whatever else. 2-hour rain delay before the game Saturday. And people still showed up for this game, Christina. And I thought it was the best atmosphere that we've seen in Fayetteville this year for sure. The best that we've seen there since the Tennessee game last year, probably maybe the Texas game last year. That was a competitive game. But you could make a strong case that, you know, in the last 4 years, there haven't been, you know, three other atmospheres that have been better than this in Fayetteville. And then you go back, like I said, into the context that this was a game that Arkansas was expected to lose. This is a season with a team that's really going nowhere fast. I just was really struck by the feeling inside the stadium on Saturday night. And I think that both the inspired effort of the crowd, and the students stayed, by the way, till the very end of that game.
Couldn't believe it.
But the it wasn't packed, but it was pretty full.
Cool.
I think they announced 73,000 as the attendance. That's probably tickets sold. But it was pretty full. I mean, you had a couple of areas up in the upper deck that were, you know, fairly vacant. But for the most part, it was full. And I thought that the inspiration from the stands was to a large degree because they felt confident in the head coach, in Bobby Petrino. I think that the effort that you got on the field, defensively, there are some limitations. I think we're all well aware of that by now. But I think that the team played hard. And I think that they're playing hard because they've got a coach who's inspiring them to play hard. I said this at the outset. I think that this job is Bobby Petrino's job to lose. And I haven't seen anything over the last 2 weeks to really bring me off of that opinion. If anything, I think it may be further enforced after what I saw in the stadium Saturday night. Again, I think if you're just watching on TV, maybe you can't perceive this. But I think that to a lot of people that I've talked to who were in the stadium Saturday night, they had that same feeling that I had, that it gets to the fourth quarter and Arkansas is in a game with the number four ranked team in the country. And there's this belief in the stadium that because they've seen what Petrino has done here in the past, that he was going to be able to pull them through. They nearly did it. I'm convinced that if they make that fourth and one stop on E.J. Smith from the A&M 34 with about 7 minutes to play, that they go down, they score, and now all of a sudden they've got the upper hand. They're the team that A&M's trying to beat, and I think that they may win that game. Didn't happen, but again, the feeling in the stadium Saturday night is something that I just think you had to be there to experience.
Yeah, you and I turned to each other when it kind of seemed like, you know, Arkansas was kind of getting back in it. I think it was third quarter sometime, and Arkansas was kind of getting back in it. It was the loudest the crowd got all game. Of course, the defense squandered it extremely quickly, mm-hmm. So the energy left the building quite quickly. But that was, you and I turned to each other and were saying, you know, this is a very fun, you know, that moment made me, I had like one of those moments of like, man, this is so fun. Like, mm-hmm. And I haven't had that in a while. And you and I were talking, we were like, when's the last time it felt like this? I was like, well, it was Tennessee last year, which isn't that long ago, but at the same time, that was the highest high of last season. That was the highest high they'd had in a while. And it felt a little bit like that. And it's funny, my boyfriend is, you know, a lifelong huge Razorback fan. And he texted me around that same moment. And was like, we're going to win this game, hire Bobby. And he's not been a Petrino, like, you know, he hasn't been anti-hire Petrino, mm-hmm. but he hasn't been like, yeah, this is who I want. And he also said, comments made in the middle of the game do not necessarily reflect my true feelings moving forward. And then obviously then they end up losing the game. The defense looks terrible, cost them the game, everything like that. But I think there was a real moment there where I kind of started to be like, this could this work? Like, this might work.
I think if you're Hunter Yurecek right now, you have to, this thought has had to have crossed his mind, that you watch this team, and I've been critical of the offense because of their lack of efficiency at times, but even in the midst of the lack of efficiency that they had in some of these games, they've still been right there in a position to win. And so I think that this thought has had to have crossed his mind. You've got an offense that when it's clicking, it's capable of playing with just about any team in the country. If you just had a sliver of a defense, I don't think it is preposterous to say that this team right now with an average to even bad defense, like I don't know that there's a word that describes this Arkansas defense.
Abysmal has been the one that I
that might be nice. That might be nice. But if they have even just an average defense right now, with the way this offense is played, they might be 6-1, 5-2, and we're talking about them as a dark horse playoff candidate. I don't think they'd make the playoffs. But I'm just saying, if they had a little bit better defensive effort in four games this year that they have lost by 30 points, or I'm sorry, there's four games this year that they've lost when they have scored 31 points or more. That had never happened in the history of Razorback football, and we're only seven games into the season. And so it just kind of shows you the historic nature of how poorly they're playing defensively. But back to Juracek, I think you've got to have this thought that if you just have a little bit of defense, you're a much better football team right now. And so, you may not have to overthink this thing and go out and find somebody new who's going to bring in this offensive identity and this defensive identity. Maybe it's as simple as saying, hey, you have your offensive identity already. You have a head coach who knows how to win, who has shown that he knows how to win in this conference, albeit in a very different league, 12 teams versus 16, in a different era before, rev share and NIL and all this stuff. But maybe it's as simple as saying, hey, Bobby, you keep doing what you're doing on offense, and we're going to give you all of the resources you need to go out and field a competent defense. And maybe it's as simple as that. And the more jobs that come open, Florida came open yesterday. We know there are going to be more jobs that come open, maybe a lot more prominent jobs. Like if Auburn were to lose this weekend in Fayetteville, I would be willing to bet that Auburn's open by Sunday. What happens at Florida State? What happens at LSU? What happens to some of these programs, like if Lane Kiffin decides that he wants to jump ship and go to a more prominent program? The coaching cycle this year, the hiring cycle, is going to be as competitive as it ever is. And you're going to have more blue blood type programs with openings this year than maybe we've ever seen in the same coaching cycle. And so I think if you're a program like in Arkansas, it's getting tougher for you to maybe go out and find a coach. And maybe it's a deal where the best candidate's sitting right there in-house already.
Petrino's defenses when he was the head coach here before, the first time, weren't fantastic. But like we've said, if they just have one that was okay, they would be,
His defenses in retrospect were actually pretty good. Mm-hmm. They just were not – like that was kind of that era where college football mm-hmm. was really starting to turn, mm-hmm. where what we thought was a good defense – we had to adjust our perceptions of it. And so you go back and you look at his defenses. I think his defenses were, I think they were typically like 20s, 30s nationally in total defense. They had some real dudes on those teams. So, think about all the NFL teams.
I remember a lot of individual, a lot of talent. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of talent. Whereas this team,
no.
What are we doing? There was a talent thing for sure. And so I think that I've seen some people who are, a little hesitant about Petrino kind of emphasized that about I think everybody can agree it would be hard for the defense to be worse than it is right now. So the bar is on the floor, but I think I've seen a lot of people say, well, what's the ceiling for a Petrino defense? And I think it depends a lot on who he would hire. I don't have a read on who he might try to go get. And so I think that's a big deal. But I think, like you said, retrospect, the fact that there was talent, the fact that he was able to get talent, I think if they are really going to give Arkansas the setup that they say they want to give, as far as, resources and roster building infrastructure from, they want more of a scouting department. They want more money, you know, all that kind of stuff. If they're going to be able to do all that, then yeah, that helps you with acquiring talent. And if you give him some defensive talent and you get him, if he hires a competent defensive coordinator, I mean, then yeah, we might be in a different situation. But I think my number one thing with the idea of, you know, if this is going to be Bobby Petrino's job is how much do you see that as a long-term solution? And do you need it to be a long-term solution?
I don't think you do. You and I were talking about this on earlier this morning, that in the same way that I think people are having to reset their view on what a successful season looks like right now, I think that people are going to have to reset what a coaching tenure looks like. Like, I don't think we're in the era, like, we're getting very close to this NFL deal where it may just be 1 or 2 years and your coach moves on to something else. Maybe he's fired. Maybe he finds something better. But I think that you're not hiring a coach anymore, or at least I don't think you are, with this 10-year vision for that head coach. I think it's more now like, what can you do in like 3 or 4 years? And it's also about what can you do next year? There is a lot more pressure on a coach and a lot more expectations when you can go out and you can buy players. You don't have to recruit them and develop them for 2 or 3 years.
You can hire a new coach and they can bring their whole roster. That's
exactly
right. Like Eddie did.
That's exactly right. And so it's all about when now. And so I think that it changes things. So, yeah, I don't think Bobby Petrino, if they hire him, is going to be a long-term solution as the head coach at Arkansas. But can he be somebody who's, you know, in place for 3 to 5 years and can get your program on more stable ground? I certainly think that there's that possibility there.
Somebody on our message board, and I don't remember who it was, so I'm sorry I don't get to shout you out by your username, but somebody said that, you know, Pittman was Mike Anderson, Petrino is Eric Musselman, and who's going to be the John Calipari? And I think that what they were saying was, who's going to be the John Calipari that they're going to hire right now? You know, who's going to be the person that they replace? You know, Petrino doesn't get the job. But the more I've thought about it, the more it's been like, well, maybe Petrino is Musselman in a more literal sense, and maybe he needs to be Musselman more than just to finish out the season. Maybe it's something that you do for a couple of years, and that, you know, gets you out to the more respectable level and helps make this job more attractive. And maybe the next time they get in on a coaching cycle when, A, they're a more attractive job, and B, it's maybe not so crowded as we think it's going to be this year.
It's going to be insanely crowded. There are 68 Power Four teams. I don't think I would be surprised if about a third of those had a coaching opening by the end of this season. I'm serious. There's been, what, 7 or 8 that have already come open just in season.
And that's just firings. There's going to be
people getting
poached from other jobs.
There are more firings to come.
Yeah.
Like, as exciting as it is on Saturday to see who wins the games, it has become like appointment viewing, I guess, on social media.
Twitter notifications are on.
Like on Sunday, who's getting canned today? Yeah. Because like it's been almost every Sunday this season that there has been a big name coach or big name coaches or big name programs that have fired their coach on a Sunday afternoon. Petrino's got to win. Like he can't go 0-7. Mm-hmm. And get the job. It can't happen. I think it's going to happen. And I'll even go out on a limb and I say, I think it happens this Saturday. I think they beat Auburn. Auburn, I've watched them a little bit this year. I got home and was able to watch a good bit of the second half of that game the other day against Missouri. Every time I've watched them, I've come away thinking that they just look totally inept on offense.
Yeah.
Their offense is really bad. Now, Arkansas's defense, and we'll get into the numbers here in a minute, they can make an offense look good. Like make an offense look really good. But I just think that this sets up, if there's ever a game that I go into and I think that it's kind of a toss-up, I like to look at which team has the best offense. I did this with LSU Ole Miss a couple of weeks ago where I thought it was a toss-up, but I was skeptical about LSU offensively. Did the same thing last week with Vanderbilt and LSU. I'm just not sold on their offense. And I've kind of been that way with Auburn this year. I felt like there were some games where they were going to be pretty competitive, but I don't trust them offensively. And so I think Arkansas's got a very good chance to win. There's also this thing where, you know, you can kind of tell which way the wind's blowing. You know what I mean? I'm not talking about in the literal sense. It's going to be 20 miles out of the south on Saturday, by the way. Yeah, 20 out of the south. There's more rain in the forecast on Saturday, too. I know you're happy about that.
I'm so mad.
But it just feels like with Arkansas, and I was talking to you about the video clip I saw from Petrino's coaches show last night where he's talking to the team, and you can tell he's got their focus after the game. It just feels like this is a team that, even though they've lost by a field goal the last 2 weeks, you can see some – like, it feels like they are on a better path now than they were 3 weeks ago. Maybe that's the easiest way to put it. Auburn, on the other hand, they look like a team that they're kind of going in the wrong direction right now. Like, they got to have their vomit moment with Hugh Freeze. They got to get him out of their system, and then maybe they can turn things around in November. So there's a lot of pressure on Auburn to win this game. I know there's a lot of whispers down there about what happens if they don't beat Arkansas. I think they've got a bye week on the back end of their game here. Maybe it's their time to make a move if they lose this game. We know how much Auburn loves to fire a coach. Like, ask Tommy Tuberville. Ask Terry Bowden. Ask Gus and Malzahn. And those were the coaches that won there.
Yeah.
They've run off several others. They ran off Gene Chizik 2 years after he won a national championship. So, you know, they give – I was telling somebody yesterday, they give new meaning to catch and release. You know, they catch them and then
– Yep.
But I think Arkansas beats them.
I do too.
I'm not going to be surprised if Auburn wins, but I think – like, I'm picking Arkansas this week to win.
Yeah, I am too, actually. And, you know, Ethan and I were talking in the press box on Saturday about, he was saying he feels like this defense's best chances are basically getting lucky and the other offense making mistakes. And Auburn can make a lot of mistakes.
They get sacked a lot.
Yeah.
Missouri sacked them 5 times
the
other
night. Well, their starting center's out. Their starting center got hurt. He's not going to play. So that's something. I don't know who they've got backing him up, but if the offensive line already to begin with, I don't know about, you know, if Auburn's starting center was particularly, you know, good or bad for them, but anytime you have a starter, especially on the offensive line down, well, now you've got a guy with less experience, that could be something. So that's notable for sure. I think this offense is definitely capable of making a lot of mistakes. Mm-hmm. Can the defense just manage to do enough? Can they just do enough? And then, you know, you do have to avoid an offensive performance like you had against Notre Dame, which we thought was going to be a shootout and was not. You know, you can't lay an egg. But I don't expect them to. Auburn's defense is not bad. Auburn's defense is pretty good.
This is weird because it's like two teams that are the inverse of each other. You've got
Arkansas hasn't had this year, really.
No, you're right. They haven't played a team that's had a bad offense since maybe the first game or two of the year. But these are like inverse of each other. You got a really good offense at Arkansas with a really bad defense. And then at Auburn, it's a really bad offense with a really good defense. And so, you know, it's like, I think I said something this morning, whose strength is weaker and whose weakness is stronger in this game? And that's going to determine who wins it. But again, I go back to if it's a tight game, which there's a chance that it could be, I lean toward the team that can score points. And Arkansas has shown that they can score more points. I think they got a better quarterback, Taylen Green, over Jackson Arnold. I think with Freeze, the fact that he took Arnold out of the portal this year, like that was his portal quarterback, his handpicked
guy. That's what you're going to do? Really?
That tells me that he's lost his touch offensively. And because Arnold was terrible at OU last year. And he hadn't been any better at Auburn this season. And I think that's one of the reasons that his job is on such shaky ground there with Auburn. Arkansas, they got to win with Petrino. I think they got a good chance this weekend with Auburn. I think they've got a decent chance the following week with Mississippi State coming in. And you win one of those games, and I wouldn't go so far as to say you win both of them, but maybe you win both of them. And then, you know, maybe you've got some momentum and you can go pick somebody off in November. So we'll see how this goes. I'm just telling you, as I sit here 3 weeks removed from the coaching change, nothing has really moved me off my perch to say that Petrino is still the guy to beat. He is the golfer who went into the weekend with a 2-stroke lead, and he just doesn't have to bogey.
Yeah.
And I don't think he has, even though they've lost a couple of games. And I've heard some criticism too. Like why is Petrino not getting criticized like Pittman did for these close losses? Well, I think this is very easy for me. Pittman recruited this team. Petrino did not. Petrino stepped in, and there's only so much you can do with that defense.
The offense, yeah.
The defense is, my gosh, it is pitiful. It is pitiful. And what they did against A&M the other day was terrible. In the last two home games, by the way, Notre Dame and A&M, they have allowed 101 points in 18 possessions. if you assume that every possession's worth 7 points, that's only 126 points that are available to those teams. They've given up 80% of all points possible, and that's at home when your defense is supposed to play its best at home. And I know those are two good offenses. Notre Dame, I think that they were I don't know if they were underrated from an offensive standpoint.
We weren't sure yet because of who they – well, they played
some
good teams.
Good.
But, yeah.
Their offense looks good. They looked good the other night against USC. They ran for like 350 in that game in the rain. A&M, their offense looks pretty good this year. But, my gosh, like to give up the points – somebody said this yesterday. If they didn't put a defense out on the field at all, they would have only given up 25 more points than they actually gave up. I mean, think about that.
Yeah. Yeah, it has been truly bad. And I know, I don't know if you want to get on your soapbox at all, because you were telling me on the phone this morning you got some comments about people saying that this actually this loss was the offense's fault, which is certainly a take one can have. And you know, the offense wasn't perfect. You know, Taylen Green, long sacks again, you know, not taking advantage of all the opportunities. There's always gonna, you know, there's always stuff you can take away. There was, you know, some wasted opportunities for sure. I'll give them this. Hung on to the ball. I mean, that's one thing on Saturday that I'm a little worried about is like, all right, are we going to get back to, you know, the turnover situation? Are we going to have, you know, because this is going to be another one where you can't afford that. Like I said, the Auburn offense is capable of making mistakes, which would be great for Arkansas's defense. Arkansas's offense is plenty capable of making mistakes, too. Mm-hmm. They didn't do it as much against A&M, which is what allowed them to...
Didn't really make... The 20
not
yard
the turnover
sack,
not the back breaking the 20 yard sack was the one that I feel was, like back breaking mistake that you had, right? Yep. I mean, am I forgetting something?
No, I mean, I think that's it. There were a couple of times where they got down inside the 10 yard line, and they couldn't punch it in and score a touchdown.
Yeah, had to kick some field goals, which those are, you know, those are missed opportunities, but yeah, those are missed opportunities. But you came away with some points. It's better than a red zone turnover that they had before, you know. So I guess maybe I'm biased by, you know, it could be worse, but yeah, some people were trying to say that this was actually the offense's fault, and I just think that's insane.
This was a comment that I got. It said, which one, offense or defense, has gotten better since Petrino took over? The defense. They're still bad, but certainly are slowing down great teams. I didn't see them slow down A&M.
Slow down? Who? Who slowed down?
I did not see that. He said the offense seems to be worse, especially in the red zone. I'll give you that. Two field goals in the first half from the red zone. Said offense lost the game against Texas A&M. I don't – like, was he watching the same game that the rest of us were watching?
I don't know. Is this like an AI bot that's like
if you
just
score 42
to get
points at
mad.
Home, you should win that game.
Sure.
And so – Petrino, he'll go out, you know, he said this after the game, it's a team loss, offense has got to score one more point, defense has got to hold them to one less point. I totally get that, but...
There's always going to be, you know,
your offense scored 42 points at home. On a defense, by the way...
That's good.
That wasn't giving up anything in SEC play. I think that's one of the things that's lost from Saturday, is how good the offense played against an A&M defense that had been elite the previous few weeks. I mean... They had given up, I think, what was it? Not very many points. 36 points and 37 possessions in SEC play. Teams were 2 of 34 on third down against them in SEC play. And Arkansas went through them like it was nothing for most of that game. Now, they got some sacks that were, like Christina said, were backbreakers. But I thought that was an outstanding performance against Texas A&M defensively.
It's hard to ask for a whole lot more. It wasn't perfect, whatever, but it's hard to ask for a whole lot more. I don't think you can say the offense lost them the game.
No.
I really don't.
I don't. I don't. The defense is so bad. It is as bad as I'm almost at a loss for words how bad the defense is, because there's just, like, a lot of times you luck into a turnover.
Sure.
You luck into
a
three and out.
Since Memphis.
I'm not saying it's easy to get a three and out, but how many times have you seen a team go three and out because they ran it for a yard on first down, or a quarterback missed a throw on second down, and now all of a sudden they're in third and long, and that's hard to convert?
Yeah.
You're not seeing that very much. So I think that worm is going to turn a little bit.
They did okay. They forced some three and outs against Tennessee that they hadn't really done before.
Forced them to five punts.
Yeah. So Tennessee, and that's, you know, Tennessee was proving to be kind of an outlier. And, you know, I think it was Matt Byrne maybe from the AEG that wrote a story that we have on our site about how they regressed. And, you know, the defense took a step back because of what they were, you know, even against Tennessee, it wasn't great. It wasn't like all of a sudden we were like, oh, this defense might be good. It was, hey, the defense is less bad. They're playing with some effort. That's good. Mm-hmm. They still played with some effort against Texas A&M, but it wasn't good, and the results were worse than they were against Tennessee.
The teams they got left on the schedule, Auburn's not good offensively. Mississippi State is not what I thought we would see from them this year offensively. Texas is terrible. LSU is not good. Missouri is – I think Missouri is going to be a tough matchup for Arkansas because of the way that they run the ball. But I think that there are some chances there for Arkansas to go into these games and play spoiler.
Those are all teams that are starting. Missouri's eighth. Those are all teams that are in the bottom half of your SEC offensive efficiency mm-hmm. ratings through this week.
It's been a tough, like, and I don't know that people thought it would be this way because Texas and LSU were thought to be so good in the preseason. But what I think is going to turn out to be the case, and you may see an instance where the team's 2-10, 3-9. I think that's possible. But I think what we're going to do is when we look back at this, say that schedule was extremely front-loaded
mm-hmm.
and the back half was a lot more winnable games.
Yeah. And
they,
you know,
played winnable games already.
Yeah. And I think Petrino will end up getting a lot of credit for that if they're able to win. Obviously, there's a lot more, you know, you do have to look at the scheduling aspect, and yeah, that, like you said, it was front-loaded. So if they're able to win some of these, that is, you know, Petrino will get lots and lots of credit, and some of, you know, it'll be deserved, but also there will be kind of be those questions about, like, all right, this is not the LSU we thought we were going to see. This is not the Texas we thought we were going to see, that kind of thing. But obviously, he's in a situation where a win is a win, and yep. you need it.
More football. So also some thoughts on this Tony Vitello situation with mm-hmm. the San Francisco Giants. First, a word from Kendall King.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. They're committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. Saturday, obviously a lot of college football, but the college baseball story was certainly being talked about a lot in the press box in Fayetteville. And I feel kind of bad, not too bad, for the Tennessee beat writers, though. They're getting ready to cover the Tennessee-Alabama game. And then early afternoon, the news breaks that what had been rumored to be a possibility, that Tony Vitello was a candidate for the San Francisco Giants, seemed to have a lot of legs, and that they were moving toward potentially hiring him. Now, as of right now, I don't know if he's been offered the job. The reporting is kind of not real specific. It only says that he is like kind of the leading candidate for the Giants. I would think that the longer that this plays out, the more likely it is that he'll stay with Tennessee mm-hmm. and not make the jump to the major leagues. But this is unprecedented stuff, the fact that San Francisco is even looking at a college head coach to be their manager. And you might be wondering, why the heck are we talking about this? Well, I'll get there. Tony Vitello obviously was an assistant coach at Arkansas, and so I think that that alone is reason. But also the fact that Tennessee and Arkansas have run this conference from a baseball standpoint. I was looking this up the other day. In the last 5 years, so since 2021, Arkansas leads the SEC in conference victories with 100. Tennessee is second with 99. And honestly, it's come down really to the fact that Arkansas just owned Tennessee
mm-hmm.
in terms of regular season play, and then, of course, the Super Regional, too. But I think this is relevant. It's amazing to me that Major League Baseball is looking at a college head coach, because this is not how managers typically are hired in the MLB. Typically, kind of your route to being a manager in the MLB historically has been, you know, you start out with one of the low A affiliates, high A, something like that, and then you work your way up. You know, you're a double A guy. You get to the triple A. Then maybe you get on as the bullpen coach for the major league team, or you're the bench coach or something like that. And then you finally, you pay your dues and then you become the major league manager. Like for years, that was kind of the path to becoming a major league baseball manager. I was listening to Joe Maddon, though, recently talk about this, and he said what's happening now is that pro franchises, the front office in particular, they don't want their analytics questioned. And so the old school baseball people who still kind of question this stuff, they're getting kind of the cold shoulder in the managerial process. And I think that's why you're seeing so many players go into these, or former players go into these manager positions who in, you know, maybe 10, 15 years ago would have been thought to not be very qualified for that job. Vitello would fit this bill too. The fact that he doesn't have any type of pro background, the fact that, you know, he's only a college coach, but he goes in there and maybe he doesn't ask all the same questions and pushes back on the analytics part of it. But I think too, Christina, it's just a sign of the respect that Major League Baseball has for what's happening at the top end of college baseball. Wes Johnson leaving here in 2018 is another example of this. You know, he went from Arkansas to the Minnesota Twins, and that was the first time that there had been any move to a major league dugout straight from a college dugout in 39 years.
That's crazy.
The only other time that it had happened in the modern history was Dick Houser. He was the head coach at Florida State in 1979. The Yankees hired him to be their manager in 1980. Well, he just so happened to be the Yankees manager also in 1978. So it's a little bit different deal because he had had that major league background. And so the fact that, you know, you go back to 2017 at Arkansas, you had Tony Vitello as the hitting coach, Wes Johnson as the pitching coach, and now potentially those are the two who are going to be the barrier breakers into Major League Baseball. That's fascinating to me. It's fascinating to me on a number of different levels, but I think it starts with the fact that you've got a head coach at Arkansas in Van Horn who had the maybe the foresight to see what these two, I don't know that he could have envisioned this for them, but he certainly had the eye for talent to be assistant coaches. But back to the major league deal, I think they are impressed with what's going on at the top end of college baseball. And whether it be Vitello getting talked about even with the Giants, Wes Johnson getting his option or his opportunity with the Twins, or, you know, these players like Caglione and Paul Skeens and Wyatt Langford and Dylan Cruz and Garrett Crochet, who when they get into the minor leagues, they are on a fast track to the majors. It just shows you what's happening at the top end of college baseball, where there used to be this huge gap between college and the professional game, or at least the professional game at the highest level. There's still a big gap, but it's not quite what it used to be.
Let me ask you this, because I am not an MLB head. I don't watch it very often. I don't have a team. I keep up with like former Razorbacks and the general news, but I'm not really plugged in on the MLB space. So to me, going from a college coaching job to an MLB manager job looks like more money for less work, which awesome. If great work if you can get it.
More money.
So to me,
more money where?
To go to MLB, but you do less as a manager.
Actually,
but you do less work. Is that not the case?
The top end college coaches are getting he's about $3 million something.
Okay.
The top end college coaches are getting paid more than a lot of Major League Baseball managers.
Okay.
Now, the top end MLB managers are, you know,
right.
He would not be that off the bat.
I mean, right?
Wouldn't you think that they would have to pay him at least what he's making at Tennessee?
Yes, I guess that's true. But I mean, you're saying top end in terms of salary, not necessarily in terms of, I guess, results. Although I guess they probably correlate.
They probably go hand in hand.
Yeah, they probably do.
You know, like a Dave Roberts, he's going to be one of the top paid managers in baseball.
Yeah. So my question is, besides money, if the money thing, you know, is more, like if an MLB manager or if the Giants were going to pay Tony Moore to be their manager, besides that, what is appealing? I guess it's just the fact that it's professional baseball as opposed to college.
Probably,
it's a bigger stage. But
probably
like,
the fact
what
that,
all does, I mean, it sounds like, it seems like it's just less work. You have less control. College coaches in general love to control every aspect of everything. Tony has his fingerprints all over that program. His players are all exactly like him. Like, that's not going to happen in an MLB. So what's the draw, I guess, besides money potentially, and I guess maybe it's the bigger stage.
What was your quote back in May? It was dripping
drenched in Tony or something. Yeah, so. Can you tell I'm not like a Tony's number one fan? Does that come across like too much?
No, I can perceive that. I like Tony. I'll be.
I know I'm like probably in the minority there, I'm willing to be proven wrong. Like if he, you know, if he
was
ever
so good
here,
to us yeah. when he was here. So I'm probably a little bit biased in my own way, but I think that if he wants to do this, I think the number one appeal is the fact that nobody ever gets this chance. And maybe you're the guy that goes out there and you're the trailblazer for all your buddies who are back here in college coaching for them to maybe get on that pathway too. I think every coach, and it doesn't matter if you're a junior high coach or you're a high school or college or pro or whatever, you have to figure out what level of – we're going to talk about men's sports here. So what age of a boy or a man, whatever you call it, do you feel like you relate the best to? Is it a, you know, and for some people, you got a junior high football coach here in town at your junior high who's been the head coach there for like 30 years, and he's left a great legacy on these, you know, 12, 13, 14 year old boys who have come through that program for decades. And that's his calling, right? Well, some their calling is college coaching. Some they're, you know, we've seen in football and basketball where you do see this college to NFL or college to NBA or vice versa movement. Sometimes you get coaches who are college coaches and they get to the professional ranks and they realize that they just don't, like, they can't coach adult men. Or you get people who have been in the professional ranks. I think maybe you're seeing this a little bit at UNC right now with Belichick. And the immaturity at the college level is probably a little bit eye-opening whenever you've only been used to coaching people who are 25 to 40 years old, mm-hmm. you know, or for the most part. And so I think that that's a decision that Tony's got to make for himself here is, you know, am I a college coach or am I a pro coach? And if I go to professional baseball, am I going to be able to make that adjustment that it takes? To me, when I look at Tony, I see a college coach.
I see somebody
who really interacts well and relates well with players who are 19 to 22, 23 years old. Now, there are players who are that age in Major League Baseball, and he'll be older than anybody else that he would be coaching, you know, if he were to go and take this job. But I think that's one of the big questions that he has to ask himself. And then also the question is, do I want to leave what I built at Tennessee?
Yeah.
Like he can coach at Tennessee forever.
Yeah.
They're never
statute territory.
They're never going to push him out.
Yeah.
He may go to San Francisco and be gone in a year and then have to come back and rebuild this thing somewhere else in the college ranks.
And somewhere else.
This is – I don't think it'll
Where
be here.
Where could that be?
It won't be here. but it's – anyway, this is a fascinating deal to me.
Yeah, it's been really interesting. And I think, you know him better, obviously, significantly better than I do. But he also strikes me as college coach just because his players love him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, guys
– they fight for him.
Yeah.
Like, literally.
Like literally. Which is, I think, one of the things I don't like about him. But you have to respect it. I mean, you have to respect it. So I think, you know, I know you don't think this – and I don't know that I necessarily think this is going to happen, but where my mind immediately went when this came up was to the point about what you just said with if he goes to San Francisco and fails, well, I think it's, you know, I think this move for Arkansas fans who want Tony Vitello to replace Dave Van Horn when he eventually decides to retire, which I think is a not insignificant number of people, this sets you up for that way better than just him straight up leaving Tennessee for Arkansas. Because if he goes to San Francisco and doesn't do great for a couple years, you know, we don't know when Dave Van Horn's going to retire. Could be a long time. If he fails and the door is open, that's way more likely for him to come here than for him to just leave Tennessee to come here in a few years whenever Dave Van Horn decides to retire.
I don't think he's replacing Dave Van Horn.
Yeah.
I don't want to go out publicly and say why, but I think you can probably read between the lines.
Yeah.
Why I think that way. So I would think that there's probably going to be some resolution to this Vitello San Francisco Giants thing within the next 24 to 48 hours. Will he go? Will he not? If he goes, then who does Tennessee turn to? Again, another Arkansas angle. They've got Josh Elander on staff there, who they've kept away from some coaching searches the last couple of off seasons. It wouldn't surprise me at all if he got promoted to be the head coach there, at least for next season. And I would think that could potentially turn into something long-term for him. Speaking of former Arkansas coaches and ties and whatnot, Alex Mortensen beats Memphis over the weekend in his first game as the interim head coach for UAB. Like, that was really cool. We were sitting there watching this in the press box on Saturday night, and, like, just so happy for Alex. You think about everything that he's gone through in his personal life in the last year with his father dying, his dad. Talk about people who were good to us. I mean, just an amazing man, Chris Mortensen. And so happy for Alex to win that game for UAB. You know, they're really bad, UAB is, and that's why they fired Trent Dilfer. And there have been people that have talked about UAB for the last couple of years saying that may be the worst FBS program there is.
And the worst hire in a long
really
time. It was bad at the time,
and then
it didn't age well.
They're 3-4. If Alex could get them to a bowl game, which if you beat Memphis, I would think that you could beat anybody in that conference, or most anybody. If he gets them to a bowl game, maybe he's the guy there at UAB. Or if nothing else, he has set himself up well for being a candidate for a head coaching job somewhere else, or maybe a higher level coordinator job. So that's pretty cool for him. And then SMU, Rhett Lashley, obviously, you know, a lot of people think that, you know, he might be in play here at the end of the season. They beat Clemson the other day. Clemson's season is going nowhere fast too. 11 straight wins for them in ACC play in regular season, because they did lose to Clemson in the championship game last year. But 11 consecutive regular season conference wins. You go back to when they were in the American, they won their last 9 there. So they've won 20 consecutive conference games. I got to tell you, what they're doing in the ACC right now, I think is one of the most unappreciated stories in college football. And you can make excuses and or you know, you can say the ACC is this and that, and the ACC is also the same conference that's spitting up and chewing out Florida State. You know what I mean? Or did I say that right?
Spitting up and chewing out.
You know what I meant. Spitting out. Oh, but anyway, Florida State, they're not
chewing out Mike Norvell. They said today that they're going to wait till the end of the season to evaluate the program, meaning he's going to make it through the end of the year.
They got $54 million. Yeah. I mean, that's his buyout. But, you know, they've lost, like, what, 12 straight ACC games? Something like that Florida State has.
Yeah.
And, but SMU, when I watched them play Nevada at the start of last season, I did not think that they were going to be able to compete in the ACC, because in that Nevada game, they were getting blown up at the line of scrimmage. And I thought, you know, they've been in the American. They're about to get their eyes opened when they get to the ACC. And they played well. I mean, they played really well. And now all of a sudden, they've got an inside track potentially to be in the ACC championship game. They still got to play Miami. Miami lost the other day. But, you know, SMU, as much as I hate the whole control your own destiny statement, I mean, they do. Like, they're in the driver's seat by beating Clemson the other day. So I think what SMU's done in the era of conference realignment, the last team that I can think of that went to a conference and dominated it this much, this quickly, was Florida State. When they went to the ACC in the early 90s.
Yeah.
Like, there's almost always an adjustment period when you go to a new league. Almost always. And so I think what Rhett's doing at SMU is pretty underappreciated, at least from a national perspective. I think they're ranked this week. But
yeah, I'm not sure. It's not showing up. I Googled what the rest of their schedule is. It doesn't show up with a little number next to their name, but it might just not be updated yet. But they have Miami. They also have Louisville, and then they also have Cal, which Cal's not great, but they have a really good quarterback, and I can't remember. Their record is not bad, especially
they beat North Carolina the other night.
Yeah, which it's not hard to do.
Nah,
that's been my favorite, and I won't get us too off topic on this, but that has been, you know, are there ever news stories, whether it's sports or otherwise, that you're like, I know this is dumb. And like, I know, you know, it's like a story that's really popular. Everybody's, you know, every news outlet's posting about it because it's getting them a ton of clicks. And you recognize it's kind of dumb, but you can't look away. Because that's me with the like Bill Belichick, Jordan Hudson. Like, I recognize that this is so dumb and it's dumb that I care. And it's annoying how many articles are being posted about it. But I am eating it all up. Every little tidbit of hot gossip we get out of North Carolina, I'm like, give it to me. I want to know everything. I don't know why. I'm just obsessed.
No,
I love mess.
Not for me, but
I love mess that doesn't affect me. Like, it doesn't.
Yeah.
It doesn't affect what we do at all. I'm just like, wow, that's crazy. I don't know. I love it.
Well, you're getting plenty of that there at North Carolina. That may be another job that comes open at the end of the year.
Yeah.
Like, going back to the coaching search, what happens at Iowa? Like, does Kirk Ferentz, does he retire this year? What about Utah, Kyle Whittingham?
And like, they've got a head coach in waiting.
Do they? Okay, yeah. There. But I guess what I'm saying is, like, so many of these Power Four jobs, it just feels like a total domino effect that we've never seen before. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's crazy. It is crazy. We've never seen anything like this. Wisconsin did come out today and say that Luke Fickell is safe for now.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I'll tell you one thing that I think is affecting the SEC is what Vanderbilt's doing. When you're Florida or you're Arkansas or maybe you're Auburn or maybe you're LSU, certainly LSU this last weekend, and you see that Vanderbilt is one of the very best teams in the country. They're ranked top 10 this week. First time since 1941 that they've been ranked in the top 10 of the AP poll. And they got College Game Day coming to town. I was talking to Jack, my 7-year-old, about this the other day. I said, Jack, this does not, like, because in his mind, since he's been watching college football, Vanderbilt's been pretty good. And so, you know, he's just like, oh, well, Vanderbilt won. But then, you know, my wife and I, we're sitting over here like, the fact that College Game Day is going to Vanderbilt is astounding. If you would have told somebody that 10 years ago that, hey, Vanderbilt's going to be a top 10 team, and they're going to be an SEC championship contender, and they're going to be hosting College Game Day on the last Saturday of October. Like, really? For a shot to go to the playoff, no less, or, you know, to have an inside track to go to the playoff. This is crazy. It's crazy. And so I think if you're one of these teams and you see that Vanderbilt has passed you, I think that creates some urgency, yeah, too. Even Saban said this the other day on College Game Day. When he was picking this Vanderbilt LSU game, he went with LSU, and he said something to the extent of, I just coached in that league for too long that I can't get past what my thoughts of Vanderbilt were. Mm-hmm. And so Vanderbilt, I think they had maybe, what you think, the biggest win of the weekend? Vanderbilt or Georgia, I would say, had the biggest win of the weekend. Georgia coming back and beating Ole Miss the way it did. But I think Georgia was kind of expected to win that.
Right.
Game.
Vanderbilt's was like more fun and exciting.
Vanderbilt was the favorite to beat LSU, but I think that there was still an element of, okay, but let's see them actually.
And it's because
do
we're
it.
Still doing the. We talked about this last week where I was like, I think I'm guilty of this when I'm making picks and evaluating the SEC and things like that. We're still doing the, oh, well, it's Vanderbilt. We're waiting for the bubble to pop, and it just keeps not popping, and they keep being good. I do
good.
Think I do feel a little bit like we need to enjoy it while we can, because I think when Diego Pavia leaves, it's going to be a little bit of womp.
Well, I think that they'll maybe take a step back, but is he a player like what Manziel did at A&M? Where, okay, now he's made it kind of cool to go there.
Yeah, it's possible.
And Nashville is one of those cities where, you know, that's an appeal to a lot of recruits. I mean, if you're picking, if your whole point of going to an SEC town is, hey, what's it going to be like at, you know, when I'm not at the football field? Well, you get this city, Nashville, that's for some people and not for others, but it's but you know, it's a city that's appealing to people. And if you're trying to pick between Nashville and Starkville, I mean, it's that, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I wonder what kind of reach he has. I was listening to somebody yesterday on a radio show somewhere, and they said, think about this in Nashville. Diego Pavia, in a city that has an NHL franchise and an NFL franchise, and the quarterback who was just the number one overall pick in the NFL draft, he might be the biggest sports name in that town right now.
That's crazy.
And it's got the potential to be, I think, something that kind of outlasts him a little
bit. Yeah. I mean, that would be ideal. I would like to see that just because I think it's fun when, you know, a new program, you know, it's the fun we've been having watching Indiana, things like that, when somebody kind of new arrives. And I hope that this is an arrival for them and not a, you know, one guy kind of changed the whole thing, and then when he's gone, you don't have anything left. And that's going to be the challenge for that staff is, okay, how do we sustain this when he's gone? How do we keep making this happen?
A few other thoughts from around the SEC over the weekend, Texas and Kentucky. I thought Texas would just absolutely roll Kentucky. It played out like I thought it would, in the sense that I thought Texas would hold Kentucky down offensively, even though I think Kentucky outgained them by a good bit. But Texas offense, I mean, it's if it hasn't gotten going by now, I don't know that it's ever going to get going for them this season.
Yeah.
I know that they're still ranked and people are talking about them as maybe a playoff dark horse. I don't see it. I think they've got a lot more losses on the horizon. A&M, I think seeing their defense in person, I know they're undefeated right now. I think that they're going to lose somewhere. You just can't keep playing like that defensively on the road like they did here or like they did at Notre Dame. And there not be some consequences for that. Like, OU had the biggest win or like maybe the most dominant win of the weekend going to South Carolina. And bouncing back from the Red River game, I thought was really good for them. I think Shane Beamer is as close to a nervous breakdown as any individual in the SEC right now. And you talk about Power Four jobs being open. Maybe that Virginia Tech job starts to look a lot more appealing to him.
No way. And then it's actually, that might be a nice exit ramp for him.
Missouri and Auburn, that was one of those where it's like, here, you take it. No, you take it. No, you.
I came home. I got home like right at the end of that, and I walked in to watch the very last couple plays, and I was like, nobody wants to win this game. No one wants to win.
And then Drinkwitz, he like ran off the field like he had won it, but they had missed a field goal.
Yes, that was so funny. And then he was like hollering in front of the band and stuff. I don't know. As a Missouri grad, I should probably like think that's really cool, but I'm like not, I'm not a Drinkwitz believer, or not believer, but I'm not a Drinkwitz fan, I guess, just because of that whole shtick. But, you know, it's cool, I guess.
Here's the thing about Missouri. I think they're like 11-2 in one score games in the last 3 years.
Yeah.
There's a, like in the same way that Arkansas's got to figure out how to get over that hurdle, Missouri has figured that out. And you can say what you want to about them and about him as a coach, but, man, they know how to win tight football games.
That's another job that could open if another school wants him. Because, yeah, he's done great things at Missouri. I mean,
I think I've read where Penn State might be interested in him.
Penn State might be. Florida is in contention. I know, obviously, Kiffin is a favorite for Florida, but people have talked about Drinkwitz in Florida for the last couple years as Billy Napier's seat has been hot. Mm. So I think the Drinkwitz, I mean, he might end up leaving Missouri, which I don't think would be great for Missouri. I think, you know, whatever you want to say about his personality, he's been great for them. He really has.
Do you have a feel for who the best SEC team is right now? If I were to say pick an SEC champion today, who would you pick?
Texas A&M?
I'd go with Alabama.
Okay.
I think Alabama.
I was going to say maybe I have like some recency-ish bias with Texas A&M, but
I'm not saying you're wrong.
Yeah.
I'm just saying I think I'd probably go with Alabama right now.
Where are they? Let me look at your rankings because I feel like Texas A&M has been very complete. Texas A&M is a more complete team.
Yeah. Alabama's not real high up in that. They're not low, but they're not like top two or three because, number one, they've still got the Florida State game weighing them down from the start of the season. And then number two, they're not manhandling anybody. Mm-hmm. They're winning a lot of close competitive games. Tennessee wasn't that close. But for the most part, it's been a lot of close competitive games with them. Their defense is not good, but it seems to make a play like what it did on the goal line against Tennessee the other night. And I do think their offense is pretty good. They can't run the ball real consistently, but their quarterback's awfully good, and they can put up a lot of points through the air.
Yeah, it seems like all of a sudden, you know, before the year it was kind of Ty Simpson, what's he going to be? And then I feel like it was very quietly he suddenly emerged as like people being like, oh, yeah, he's probably going to be in New York. Like, and I'm like, huh? I remember, you know, it feels like a couple weeks ago we didn't really know what they had with him. And, yeah, I feel like very quietly they've been, you know, I think people counted them out kind of early. And then, yeah, quietly they've been kind of building up that goodwill again.
It's like the quarterbacks in the preseason that we thought were going to be the SEC's best have actually been some of their worst.
And he's kind of filling that void a little bit.
And you know, like Talen, we thought that there's a potential that he could be. And he's turned into a pretty good quarterback for Arkansas. But Simpson, yeah, I feel like he's kind of come out of nowhere to kind of take that mantle right now. Gunnar Stockton's another one that I would say, like, he's playing at a really high level for Georgia.
Diego Pavia,
he struck the Heisman post the other day at the end
LSU. Honestly, he should.
That was a heady play he made at the end. He can run in for a touchdown and put him up by two scores, but he knew LSU didn't have any timeouts, slides down at the one, game over. Like, that's a smart play. That won't show up in the box score, that won't show up on his touchdown count or anything, but that's a smart play.
Yeah, so I like him. He's great. Vanderbilt, number one, still in your power rankings, most complete, you know.
I keep waiting for it to change.
Yeah,
but
and
as of right now, it hasn't.
I keep waiting for them to be Vanderbilt, and they aren't.
Yeah.
But they are.
All right. Christina, appreciate you being here. We appreciate all of you being here with us today as well. Be back with another show tomorrow. Hope that we see you then or at our website, wholehogsports.com. Have a great day, everybody.